Hello and welcome to Sin. No. hello and welcome to Pre. The Geek Show? No. It's welcome to Four Panel. I got a bit confused there because they let me in the cool house of all the cool kids and let me do the comic show with them. And I'm Rob and Mick's here. Andrew's here and so is other Rob.
We are. Yes. Well done, Rob. You stated the facts.
Yes. And we are the cool podcast.
Also, I'd like to point out that on Wednesday's Geek Show, we did spend like 90% of it talking about comics. So basically all the shows are the same now.
They've all blended into one big morass.
Yeah, they're basically the podcast equivalent of the Arrowverse.
I'm not Arrow. One of you guys can be Arrow. I'm not going to be Arrow.
Fine, Rob's Supergirl.
That's fine with me. I'm happy to be Supergirl.
Things got odd.
In record-breaking time, I might add.
So, welcome to the show, Rob. This is what it's like all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always on the other side of the fence because I edit this show. So, yeah, it's weird.
Oh, that's a point.
You're that one kid who looks in the gorilla enclosure and goes, yeah, I want a piece of that.
Yeah, and gets a piece of that and thinks, hang on, no, I didn't realise this is what it was. Abort, let me out.
Stop stroking me with your hairy hands.
Don't throw that my way.
Comics are a thing, though, yeah.
Yes, they are. Yes. Oh, isn't it San Diego Comic-Con?
Well, that was recently.
Yeah, it was around that time.
Yes.
And because it was San Diego Comic-Con, in another break from tradition, we have actual news.
Really?
Things have happened.
Wow. Gadzooks.
Real things?
Yes, real things that we can say with our mouth holes.
Egads.
So, let's kick things off with Captain Marvel, why not? We finally know some actual details about the plot of the film, and they're quite surprising, because first of all, it's going to be set in the 1990s.
Okay.
And, surprisingly enough, the villains are going to be the Skrulls.
Ooh.
Okay, so has that now got everyone guessing which characters in the MCU are Skrulls?
No, yeah, no. For me, I think it's more on a sort of a basic how they're putting it together level, you know. I mean, if they're doing it in the 90s, the cast Brie Larson as Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers. Captain Marvel, sorry. And she's quite young. Hmm. So is Captain Marvel ageless? Or are they going to age her up to be in the modern continuity? Or is this going to be one of these things where she's kind of off to one side, like the Guardians of the Galaxy? Because putting it in a time...
I think she's going to be off to one side. I think she's going to be off to one side, because what I've heard is she's not going to be in the Infinity War movies.
Does that mean they're going to age her up?
I don't know.
See, I don't know, though, because she is a big part of the Avengers in the comics.
She is, but, I mean, do you really want, wrinkly Brie Larson fighting against Thanos?
Yeah, I totally have that.
Maybe I do. You don't know what I get up to at home.
You don't know my search history.
The other thing that I want to bring up, okay, is that Captain Marvel, while she's on Earth, she works closely with S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah? But during the 90s, the Hoff was Nick Fury.
Only once.
Once was enough.
Once was too much.
So, I'm wondering.
Thankfully, Marvel have preempted your stupidity, Rob, and they have confirmed that Sam Jackson's going to be Nick Fury, and he's going to appear.
Okay.
And he's going to have both eyes and everything.
Which, I mean, spoiler alert, he does have both eyes. It's just he's an actor. So sometimes when he's playing a role, he puts the eye patch on.
I never knew that.
And back in the good old days.
That would explain why Nick Fury looks so much like that guy in Snakes on a Plane. It makes sense.
That is actually his twin brother, Jake Fury.
Is it?
Ain't this one,
because that's a real comic book character.
Isn't this one scheduled for 2019?
Yes. Yes, it is. Which, to be fair, that might be more why Captain Marvel isn't appearing in Infinity War.
Yeah. Probably.
So it's just not yelling, look, here's a completely random character we haven't introduced yet.
Well, there is the whole contract negotiations thing. So I think only Tony Stark, no, that's not his real name, is it? Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans have maybe 2-3 of my movies tops. And I don't think they're going to recast the characters. So I think they're going to have to use some new ones to fill in some gaps. And maybe that is the purpose of Captain Marvel.
Could be.
Yeah, yeah, I could easily see it, like...
So, like, Captain Marvel is the lead-up to the next iteration of, like, the Avengers and stuff.
Like, she'll fill in the Captain America hole.
Actually, I was just going to say, I could easily see them at the end of Captain Marvel. She has some time wibbly-wobbliness and ends up in the present day.
It'll probably happen. I mean, that's the kind of thing that Marvel love to do.
Yeah.
Well, totally. Maybe they'll just start, like, really referencing the comics and have characters who just don't age.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
And there's like, Thor is basically a god, so, yeah, he's cool. Even though he looks weird with short hair.
Just, I missed his long, flowing locks.
Yeah.
Trailer of Thor Ragnarok was very good, though. That was a San Diego Comic-Con thing as well.
It was, like, I'm very excited for that film.
Yes. The big reveal of that trailer was that Thor... No, no, Hulk is talking with some sort of coherence.
Yeah, they reckon yeah, it's...
Oh, there's also another big reveal in the trailer that I'm not sure if I can talk about, but I'm very excited about.
Well, if it's in the trailer, you could talk about it. Or is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think we're not so sensitive that trailers can be spoiled.
No.
And not only that, but what we've got is a situation where we're used to things being in trailers not turning up in films.
True.
That at, is, least with, yeah, at least with the Hulk thing, I think that is going to be a major part of it, you know.
Yeah, but also a major part of it is that the demon Surtur is going to show up.
Yes.
But more importantly, the demon Surtur is going to show up, and he's voiced by Clancy Goddamn Brown.
Really?
Yes. Like in Lex Luthor / the Kurgan.
Wow.
/ that dude in the Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, that's an amazing Clancy voice Brown. To choose for Surtur.
He is a man with a great voice.
Yes, he is. So what else has been happening in at San Diego Comic-Con then?
Just one final thing. It's not major news, but they've announced who's going to be playing the original Wasp, which is Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing I was going to mention with this story. Good catch, Rob. But also, apparently, that's the end of the news. Rob coming on the show dictating when we can have final things.
It wasn't a final thing. I was just bringing it up.
What, is there no more news from San Diego? Was that it?
There's no more news ever. That's it. The show's cancelled. It's finished.
It just trailers mainly, wasn't
final
it?
Final thing.
What? No final wrap-up episode to tie up all the loose ends?
No, just like a real comic book.
That's a shame.
To finish it with one really ambiguous line and then there you go, we'll never finish it, never follow it up.
And then in 5 years' time we'll do a limited run miniseries.
Yes. Which will answer none of the questions.
No. One of the questions well, that I've got...
On the San Diego thing, they did also release like an extended trailer for Justice League.
Yeah, it was kind of boring.
Like 4 minute thing, and they didn't really add anything.
Well, there's a bunch of people saying that there's a hint of Green Lantern in there, just because the comment was made, no lanterns.
Yeah, they mentioned that the Green Lanterns are a thing that exist.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of people saying, oh, Green Lantern's going to be in, it's a sneaky thing. Oh, he's the one who turns up at the end. But we know it's Superman who turns up at the end.
Yeah, speaking of Superman...
Yes.
Because we have... what is quite possibly my favourite news story of recent years, and that is that the Justice League movie is going to have to undergo some reshoots, and there's quite a lot of controversy over how expensive they're going to be and how long they're going to like delay the film. Basically, these reshoots, they're going to be spread over 2 months, and they're apparently going to cost around $25 million.
Wow.
Whereas normal ones cost kind of between $6 and $10 million.
So why are they doing these reshoots?
Well, I think it's mostly just the normal kind of going back and fixing things, especially because Joss Whedon, he's replaced Zack Snyder now, so he probably wants to fix some things up.
Okay.
But a big reason why they're going to be so expensive is that Henry Cavill is in Mission Impossible 6.
Yeah.
And as part of his role in that film, he's contractually obliged to have a mustache now. And he's not allowed to shave it off. So they're going to have to digitally remove it.
I ask questions. I mean, does his character need a mustache? Is this like a mustache is everything in Mission Impossible?
Could they not just shave him and put on one of those stick-on mustaches?
Apparently not.
Because it wouldn't be the same mustache.
I don't know which scenario I like better. Superman rocking it with just a random mustache, or the main villain of Mission Impossible 6 just randomly changing his mustache halfway through the film.
to be fair, though, at the end of whatever the last Superman movie was called, I've kind of blanked it out. He did die a bit.
Legal battle of the century.
Yeah, he did die a bit. So, I mean, he died in the way that he didn't die because he stuck his arm out the grave.
Hang on.
Excused for, like, toning down his, like, shaving regime.
No, but are you talking about the fact that your hair and your nails continue to grow after you die?
No, I mean, you know, he didn't want to be the pretty boy anymore. He couldn't be bothered. He had a bit of downtime. Yeah, he drank a bit of Mountain Dew, played a bit of Call of Duty, and then...
Are you suggesting that when Superman returns, he's going to think, Lois is going to really love it if I rock this bad boy look?
Yeah.
So he's going to turn up looking like some kind of 70s porn star? With
his big look like Superman from the Gods and Monsters universe.
Oh, no, my God.
No. Guys, don't worry. I fixed it. Because obviously, Clark Kent has to be, like, legally declared dead as well to explain how he's disappeared.
Yeah.
Therefore, when Superman comes back, he needs to start masquerading as his identical twin brother, Mark Kent. And the only difference between the two is his mustache.
Throw in some Hawaiian shirts as well. I think that'll complete the look.
No, because now he's starting to sound more like Joey Ryan.
Leave Joey Ryan alone, Rob. Leave him alone.
It's the mustache and the Hawaiian shirts.
He didn't ask for this. You threw it upon him.
I'm confused.
Speaking of inexplicable things, Frank Herbert's Dune is finally getting a three-part graphic novel series. The main question I've got is, why has it taken so long? It's been adapted for, like, a video game, movie, a couple of movies, in fact, a TV series and all sorts of other stuff, but never a graphic novel.
It is bizarre.
Because it only has one timeline, and comic books don't like it that simple.
If we need Dunes of future past.
Secret Spice Wars.
It doesn't make sense.
Probably
though.
A reference to things that actually happen in Dune.
Probably.
I don't know. Like, out of all these books, TV shows, movies, video games, or whatever, I've experienced absolutely none of them.
Okay.
It's fine. Well,
it's a far-reaching sci-fi saga.
Yeah, I know. There's sand and Sting and a big worm.
Space nonsense.
To be fair, Sting is only part of one of the iterations.
Is that Sting the musician or Sting the wrestler?
Sting the musician.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think Sting the wrestler might fit in.
Sting the musician was in the film version of Dune.
Yeah. And there's several books. There's like Dune and then Children of Dune, God Emperor of Dune, Heretics of Dune and various other things of Dune.
Chapter House of Dune.
Yeah.
Watch a Dune. That's a bad pun, sorry.
Bacon Smokers of Dune. I don't know.
Hey, Watcha Doin' Dune.
And Dune, Where's My Car?
Yes.
Terry and Dune.
Oh, dear.
I win.
Fantastic Four versus Dr. Dune.
Yeah, that expanded the universe, and it was only then when they thought this would be a good time to turn it into a comic book. Because it's a bit of a tome.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, just the first one on its own is a hell of a tome. I mean, the first book alone is probably about the same length as the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yowzers.
And there's a lot of people walking on their own through sandy dunes.
Yes.
Ruminating.
Yes. Well, with the popularity of Saga, maybe. Saga is quite Dune-esque, only more to the point.
But it's one of those things, it's like, you know, it's one of the classic works of sci-fi, and almost all the other classic works of sci-fi have had a graphic novel treatment of some kind, even if it's been an abortive one.
Yeah, I mean, there are older ones from, like, the 1940s and 50s that haven't been touched yet, but nobody really remembers them. But Dune, it's been around for years, and people still remember it even now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's confusing, but... something else that was puzzling, and we don't know actually why this has happened, Suicide Squad Black Files, which was due to be released, has been pulled a week before its actual release. It's been cancelled, and DC haven't actually said why.
It's just a comic book or an animated
book,
movie?
A comic book.
But they have...
It's like a three-issue miniseries or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it can't be because it was rubbish, because DC don't care about that.
Yeah.
Maybe they just finally realise that every time they make a Suicide Squad thing that isn't written by John Ostrander, I get very sad.
The weird thing is, though, they have announced that it will be solicited for sale at a later date.
So I'm thinking, because it's written by Mike Barr and Jai Nitz, so
that's
maybe,
a cool name.
Maybe they've written something in there that needs to be changed. I don't know.
Maybe it's just like a product placement thing, like they're saving it for like any future cross-media Suicide Squad, so they're releasing it sort of a promotional thing.
Pass.
You know how like now there's an awful lot of movie companies releasing old war films because apparently there's a war film on at the cinema. That sort of cheap cash innery.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's the latest one in the sci-fi franchise, Dunkirk.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, I got one eventually.
And not only that, but it classes as a callback. We love a callback.
Yes.
So Todd McFarlane wants to make a Spawn movie.
I'm all for that. Because I'm like one of the six people in the world who actually didn't mind the original Spawn movie, but I also... make case that are probably too young to truly grasp it.
I quite like the original Spawn movie, but then again, I like Michael Jai White anyway.
No, it was just such a unique thing. Like he's been given powers by like demons, and he goes and fights demons on Earth and whatnot. I don't know the entire lore of it. It was a long time ago, but it's just when there's a lot of homogeneousness in the superhero and the comic book movie world, something completely left field like Spawn, yeah. I think is. Welcome for me, at least.
I remember Spawn coming out as a concept in the comics originally, and everybody was so stoked about Spawn the movie. I think it was unfortunate in, shall we say, not having perhaps the traditional production values one might associate with a comic book movie.
Yeah,
the early 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The effects were a little ropey.
So
to say the least.
80s movies are amazing. Like 80s like genre movies are amazing, and their effects are ropey. It doesn't make them bad.
The costumes were great. It's just
to be honest, it's not that long since I watched Spawn the movie, because I never got around to seeing it when it came out. It falls apart really quickly. It starts off okay, but it falls apart really quickly.
Yeah, this is true. I thought they picked a pretty decent actor to play the main character, because at the end of the day, you just want a big scary guy, and Michael Jai White is a big scary guy.
Racist.
I didn't say anything about his
colours. You should say that.
Yeah?
Because, so the big headline that I've got up when I typed in Spawn movie is, Todd McFarlane wants Leonardo DiCaprio for the Spawn movie.
What?
Oh, to your point about the big scary guy, Rob.
Yeah.
Where does that fit in?
It doesn't. It really doesn't. That's like I don't know, Hell's Avenger being one of those cute little cherubs from heaven.
Leonardo DiCaprio will eventually be in a superhero movie, but not that one.
It's only a matter of time.
Yeah, but to explain. Right.
Basically, what Todd McFarlane said is he doesn't want Spawn to be the main character of the Spawn movie.
What?
He basically said it's going to be like a Jaws-type thing. That's going to be about a policeman who starts investigating a bunch of grisly murders and comes across Spawn.
It's kind of like how Metal Gear Solid. Metal Gear Solid 2, Snake was just there in the background where you were.
Actually, it's more like, you know how...
Yeah, basically, but with less nanomachines.
Yeah. Do you remember that game Evolve, Rob? And you suggested that maybe Evolve would be better as a Batman game.
Yeah.
So it's probably more like that, where you see like the bad guys and then the big scary thing in the shadows just takes them apart.
Well, and he's basically a demon, so...
Yeah.
You know, with horror movies, the more you see the monster, the less scary it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that works.
Yeah, I think I'm a bit worried it might end up a bit like Godzilla, where it spends an inordinate amount of time trying to tease a reveal for something that we already know exactly what it is.
This is true.
Suitability of Leonardo DiCaprio aside, I think pitching that kind of celebrity name as the lead character is probably indicative of the kind of money that they want to throw at this.
Yeah.
I mean, if we've got like plucking names out of thin air, just sort of aura of actors, I'd say Michael Shannon would be good.
Yeah.
who, what's he most famous for?
Well, he's General Zod.
Yep. Oh, yes, yes, General Zod, yeah. He would be perfect for Spawn, I think, because he's kind of, he's very good at playing scumbags.
Yes, he is.
And he's not going to have like a recurring role for Zod because his head was pulled off. Naughty Spider-Man. No, not Spider-Man, naughty Superman.
And that is this week's crossover.
Spider-Man versus General Zod.
While Superman wasn't looking, Spider-Man came, turned up and just pulled Zod's head off.
You do realise that somewhere now in Marvel HQ, someone is writing the Spider-Man Zod crossover comic.
Well, see, what it was Spider-Man wasn't trying to kill Zod. He just saw Zod fall off a bridge and he tries to save him.
Yes.
He's really bad at that.
Not his skill.
It does prove that Spider-Man can't multitask.
Yeah, that might be a symptom of me reading too much Spider-Man this past fortnight. So, yeah, sorry about that slip up.
We'll let you off. They both begin news? With S and end with man. Yeah. So,
any other news, Andrew?
I think that's probably about it.
Okay, so let's take a break there, and we'll be back with some comics.
Oh, random thought though. Idris Elba should totally play Spawn.
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be cool as well. Yeah.
Yes.
Now we can have a break.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literally Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literally Loitering.
Hi there, I'm Robert Rankin, and you're listening to The Geek Show. Oh, yes.
Hey, you! Yes, you! No, not you. You! You should listen to our TV show. It's called On The Box. Just tell them Andrew sent you. Also, you can go listen to it as well.
Welcome back. And now it's time for comics and something a little bit special later on. And we're going to start off with Mick.
All right. Okay. I better wake up then. Right. Yeah, so this week, my comic that I'm going to review is Wynonna Earp, the graphic novel on which the sci-fi TV series is based. And to say I was a little bit shocked at the wild variation from the source material is an understatement. So for those who've not seen it, Wynonna Earp is currently in its second season, and it's about a descendant of Wyatt Earp who protects the homestead against rampaging demons, and there's a lineage story, so the power to fight these demons is handed down through the Earp bloodline, and Wynonna is the latest person to hold the mantle. There's a supernatural gun that can dispatch demons to hell called Peacemaker, and it glows when it shoots a demon, and it can only be wielded by the heir to the Earp powers. That's the TV series. Now, within the TV series, Wynonna is played by Melanie Scafforio, who's an attractive young lady, but she's not, shall we say, comic book attractive. She doesn't look like a Pamela Anderson clone.
Okay, but then I have to question you and ask, how many real-world women are comic book attractive? Gal Gadot doesn't count. You're not allowed to use her as an example.
No, I get what you're saying. But, you know, the character is based on a graphic novel.
Yeah.
By Bo Smith. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm enjoying the series, so I'll go back and I'll read some of the original source material. And it landed, and I opened it. And oh my word, is the character different. She looks like barbed wire.
Oh God.
Comic barbed wire or movie barbed wire?
Movie barbed wire.
Oh dear.
It's a very different, in this first volume that I'm reading, which is called Strange Inheritance, which collects together the original run of Wynonna Earp. It's an interesting little collection. There's some sort of prehistory of her getting recruited. She works as a federal marshal for the Black Badge Division, who are a bit like they are to the US Marshals what the X-Files are to the FBI. They investigate the uncanny, the unnatural, etc. And she gets recruited after beheading a demon in a local bar. And that's pretty much what it is. It's like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but with a slightly different twist in that she inherited the powers from her great-grandfather. So the stories cover a sort of Monster of the Week theme. I'm just about to embark on the final story in the collection, which is The Yeti Wars, which is set in Alaska. And unlike the TV series, which is set very much in the same sort of county area in Arizona, the comic takes place all over the US. She gets shipped around in a special US Marshal's jet to visit various places where unnatural goings on have been occurring. And it's massive fun. If you are a fan of the series and you're expecting to see the regulars of Doc Holliday, Agent Dolls, and Waverly, Wynonna's younger sister, they're not in it. She's very much on her own. The big bad from season one of the TV show, Bobba Del Rey, is in this collection, but is a very different character and not nearly as major a player in the universe as is in season one of the TV show. So they've really taken a different spin. Now, whether that's because they realised that doing a successful TV show probably needed a bit more substance than just a girl with a gun and rather large assets.
Montgomery's.
I don't know. I may have to do some research into why they've chosen to change the character quite so radically. It may have been a casting problem, to be honest. But yeah, it's proper good fun comic book stuff. It's here's a demon. Here's someone who's badass with a gun who's going to sort the demon out. Let's go with it. Don't expect huge amounts of relationship angst. Don't expect huge amounts of character development other than the mythology of the individual monsters that she's fighting. But just go with it.
Sounds interesting.
There is precedence for that sort of thing, though, where they completely deviate from TV from comic book to TV.
Well, apparently the new Watchmen TV series is going to deviate a lot from the original source material as well.
Yes.
It's going to deviate in the way of not being a thing that gets created.
Yes, because they haven't actually had any meetings about it yet, which I was going to mention in the news section, but as someone's brought up Watchmen and the HBO series, I thought I'd mention it now just to mix things up a bit, because that's the kind of guy I am. That's how I roll.
Walking Dead is very different, you know.
I mean, to be fair, a lot of it probably comes down to like budgetary concerns.
Yeah, and I think that's true with One Under Earth, that some of the stuff that's depicted in the comic would be restricted heavily by budget. But it's just that the main storyline is completely different. Now, I know that IDW have published subsequent series that are a bit more in tune with the TV series and actually use the stills from the TV show on the covers. And I've got one of those volumes in my pile ready to read. So it may well be that they do some serious retconning somewhere along the line to explain the changes. There is one nice little story in the collection, where Wynonna does Wynonna, depends how you want to pronounce it, but, she does a bit of fourth wall breaking. But unlike the Harlequin Deadpool-style fourth wall breaking, where it's very much the character is self-aware, it's actually the author that breaks into the story and has a conversation with Wynonna about why the series has come to an end.
Okay.
Which is quite an interesting little twist on that breaking of the fourth wall. But fortunately, the publishers saw sense and brought her back for more demon-slaying adventures.
Okay, cool.
Sounds like Kingsway West, but Kingsway West was a bit dull.
Yeah.
Well, up to now, there haven't been any major arcs on the Wynonna Earp stuff, so it's very, very much sort of three or four issue runs max of a particular story. So the action keeps on going at quite a good pace. There's very, very little padding in there, except on Wynonna.
Fantastic. So, Andrew, I believe you're up.
Well, speaking of Kingsway West, but less kind of air, I've been reading The Sixth Gun, which falls into kind of the same category of sort of Western-esque, but with stuff thrown in. So this is a series by Cullen Bunn and Brian Hurt. It's kind of set in a version of the Old West, where, you see, magic is real, and in the American Civil War, there was a general by the name of Oleander Hume who found 6 magic guns, which he used to kind of turn his men into like the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse. Except then there were also 2 other guns, because there were 6. That's why it's called the 6th gun.
Okay.
I hope you're following.
I am. It's all sounding very much like the plot of Sleepy Hollow.
Possibly a bit.
Mm.
But anyway, this is the series after the war, where General Hume was eventually defeated, and because he can't be killed, he was instead locked in a coffin and buried in a well on holy ground. But now his men kind of saved him and are trying to regather the guns so that they can take over the world.
Okay.
And thrust into that is the pair of Drake Sinclair, who is kind of a former soldier of Hume's, who's kind of turned bounty hunter, and Becky Montcrief, who accidentally comes into possession of the 6th gun, which, in addition to kind of having an infinite amount of bullets, also allows its user to see the future.
That must be handy.
And how does it allow them to see the future? Do they stare down the sights at the future? And then
it just gives them kind of visions.
Ah.
Like, there's a great bit at the start of the series where Becky's father is the one who has the gun before he's killed. And he's like elderly and bedridden, but still takes down like most of the army coming to kill him by just kind of randomly firing shots out the house.
Which you can do when you've got infinite bullets.
Yes.
Well, and know where your opponent is going to be.
Also, no recoil, it's by the sounds of it. Well, he's completely bedridden and he's still, you know, he's still shooting everything.
It's a very fast-paced adventure. It's kind of the run across the West, going through all these big set pieces. Like, I've read this first 6 issues and there's already been both, well, first of all, a shootout in a bar with a bunch of mud golems, then another shootout in a canyon with a thunderbird, and finally an even bigger shootout where Drake, Becky, and the entire inhabitants of a fort have to fight against the general and his zombie army.
See, when you said that he had a shootout with the thunderbird...
No, not like one of the Tracy brothers.
That's what I was thinking.
Or a bottle of cheap wine.
isn't that like
brains?
Isn't that like an easy win, though? High noon on Tracy Island.
See, I can't enjoy this joke because the Thunderbird is actually really cool. Like, for most of the issue, you don't even see it. It's just these giant talons that come down, like, scoop people up.
See, that sounds awesome.
The face of brains from the Thunderbirds.
Maybe they were the ones piloting it.
Maybe.
Or is it Thunderbird ? The one that they never told anyone existed?
Thunderbird Black Ops.
Thunderbird literally just a Thunderbird.
Sneaky devil.
Yeah, hiding it in plain sight.
But yeah, I like it. It's this fun combination of kind of spaghetti westerns mixed with like old Native American folk tales and a little bit of Lovecraft thrown in at the end, because there's also a vault that when all 6 guns are placed kind of in a holster at the front will open up a cave full of unimaginable evil.
Groovy.
Groovy indeed.
Excellent. So, my turn, is it?
Yep, it is.
Right. And so I am heading off into strange territory with Dynamite series. I don't know if you guys are aware, Dynamite did a limited comic book series several years ago called Project Superpowers. And that series resurrected a bunch of Golden Age superheroes that were originally published in other comic book publications from like Fox Comics, Crestwood Publications, stuff like that. There's no real Marvel or DC in there. And they basically had this thing called Project Superpowers. It ran for a while. It had a degree of success. People seemed to like it. And they had some interesting characters from the Golden Age of these comics, like the American Spirit, the Black Terror, the Death-Defying Devil, Dynamic Boy, Fighting Yank, the F-Troops.
They really mastered that whole adjective noun format, didn't they?
Oh, God. There's some even better ones. There are some even better ones. Mr. Face.
What does he do?
The Target. And V-Man, just to name a few of them, right? Spin on several decades, and there's a new Project Superpowers series called Hero Killers. And Hero Killers is set in a very specific city called Libertyville in USA. It used to have the name of Murder Town, but it's now called Libertyville because the current mayor of Libertyville, called Smooth Willie Williams Jr., set up an initiative. There was so much crime in Murder Town, and there were superheroes all over the place, and he wanted them to gather in Murder Town and solve the crime problem. So he offered these superheroes a job. He said, okay, we'll give you paid employment, pensions, we'll give you a place to live, you can school your kids here, everything like that. Just basically take care of all the crime. And for every criminal you bring in, we'll give you a bonus. And it worked. All of the superheroes gathered in one city. Because
so Smooth Willie was able to beat out crime.
Yes, he was able to beat out crime.
I can't help but feel that maybe a simpler way of easing the crime problem was be renaming the town.
Yeah, well, the thing is, after they solved the crime problem, they changed the name of the town from Murder Town to Libertyville. And so everything seems great, right? Wrong. See, now you have another problem. A problem that the mayor, Smooth Willie, didn't actually realize was going to happen, because now Libertyville is full of bloody superheroes. And all of them, some of them have basically moved on from superheroing and now they're waiting on tables, you know, washing cars, filling up the gas, things like that, or going out to work in an office. It's basically, it's very much, you remember that bit in The Incredibles where Mr. Incredible has to go to work and stuff like that? Yeah. It's very much that for some of these heroes. But for the rest of them, they want to recapture the glory days of when they were heroes, and that's causing its own problem. See, this opens with some robots who are basically bootlegging, right? And one of the heroes has found this bootleg operation, and he's like, I'm going to take them down. I'm going to be first. This is going to be my day. And then all of a sudden, there's like 50 heroes just burst out through the wall to take down these bootlegging robots. And so they beat the crap out of everybody, only for Black Terror Jr., Black Terror's sidekick, to point out that bootlegging had stopped being a crime 70 years ago, and the bottles that these bootlegging robots had were filled with nothing. At which point, all the heroes go, crap, so they didn't commit a crime. We've accidentally committed a crime by beating the crap out of them. So they all scarper. Black Terror Jr. has a problem. See, Black Terror Sr. really wants to recapture his glory days, but he's also kind of a drunk now. And so Black Terror Jr., Captain Battle Jr., who is kind of the sidekick of Captain Battle, and Sparky, who is the sidekick to the detective Big Blue, the three of them are friends, and they're not happy with the current situation. They want to be heroes as well, but all the senior heroes keep getting in their way. And then they spot one of these evil doctor, professor, mad scientist types in his submarine, so they take him down, only for Black Terror to come along and say, I'm taking all the credit, you kids scram. Black Terror Jr. not happy about this, so he basically pulls his gun on Black Terror Sr. and initially you think he's killed him, but it turns out he hasn't. He sent him to a different dimension. But it's quite horrible the way he does it. And so they're trying to cover this up. So this is where the hero killers comes in, because it's one of those situations where they've done something wrong, and by trying to cover it up, they're actually making things worse. And Big Blue is suspicious as to what's happened, and he hasn't seen Black Terror around. So he eventually confronts Sparky by the simple expedient of dressing up as a woman, getting Sparky drunk, and basically getting Sparky to hit on him and take him back to Sparky's apartment. This, I just want to remind you, Sparky is his sidekick. And Big Blue confronts him, says, I know everything that's happened. Sparky accidentally kills Big Blue by, electrocuting him, and he then falls over onto a spike through his head, which plucks out one of his eyeballs. At that point...
You read some weird stuff, Rob.
Yeah, at that point, Black Terror Jr. turns up. Black Terror Jr. has just returned from beating the crap out of Rainbow Boy, who has once again been given the key to the city. But what people don't realize is Rainbow Boy has been in a relationship with the mayor for a while, which is why he keeps getting the key to the city. And things are escalating from there. I've only read the first two issues of this, but it is just, it's steadily getting worse.
Hold on. Rainbow Boy keeps getting given the key to the city.
Yeah, by the mayor. There is a euphemism there.
On a nightly basis.
Yes.
Okay. See, I was thinking, how many keys to the city do you actually need?
I don't know. But the thing is, when the heroes appear, they've got these really cardy, like Golden Age battle cries, like, soak in my spooky face, you horrible criminals, or behold my black, black terror. Bootlegging skull.
Soak in my spooky face.
Yes.
That makes no sense.
I know.
I think Rob is the one going out and writing all these things.
No, this is so weird and corny. It's basically like somebody went back to Golden Age comics and thought, I wonder what would happen if I gave all of the people writing these comics a little bit of acid.
A little bit?
A little bit of LSD, and then just you know, wind them up and let them go. That's what this is like.
Sounds like you've been at the magic mushrooms again, Rob.
This is totally weird. It makes not a jot of sense, but, you know, it's so ridiculous, I kind of love it.
Okay.
Okay.
Fascinating. The story that Rob made up.
Hey, you're only just embarking on your journey into comic books, Rob.
Rob, why don't you kick that journey off while me and Ian Mick ring the nice doctors so they can come round with the special jacket that Rob likes?
Oh, no, yeah. No. He's going to need the jacket with what he's got.
Well, no, not really. I mean, I've been reading a lot of Spider-Man. Just a bit of background. Started that off with Ultimate Spider-Man, which was a pretty long run by Michael Brian Bendis. Some highlights of that was, Carnage being Gwen Stacy, who died, and now she's not dead, but Venom took the Carnage out of her, and yeah, so she's alive now.
And you thought you thought Hero Killers was weird.
Well,
it's almost as weird as that series written by the author's identical twin brother, Brian Michael Bendis.
Yes.
Yeah. I did a oopsie. But yeah, it was a long run. It was a good run. It sort of reinvented the canon, basically, so people could get back into it. Because Spider-Man, a bit complicated, to put it politely. But it built up and built up and built up to a point where Peter Parker died really dramatically. He was shot by the Punisher as he was jumping in. He was trying to save Captain America. But, you know, he'd gone on his way and there was all sorts of shenanigans going on in Queens. And he ultimately ended up dying on his front lawn as he was attacked by the Sinister Six. But it was the Punisher who killed him, basically. And from the embers of that came Miles Morales, who was bit by another spider, this one with the number 42 on. And he became a new Spider-Man. But instead of his powers basically just being spider strength, he also had like a venom. Venom punch, basically. But yeah, that story resolved itself. It was nice. You know, he had sort of a guilt about being Spider-Man when nobody wanted him to be Spider-Man because he was 13 when he started that. And, you know, Peter Parker got a bit of a jip for doing that when he was 16. But there's a bit of a time gap because about three quarters of the way in, Miles's mum dies in a really, really good scene, dramatic scene in which Venom is basically looking for Spider-Man, massive furore in a hospital, and his mum ends up dying in Miles' arms, realising that he's in fact Spider-Man, giving him sort of the blessing. But, you know, his mum died in his hands, so he doesn't do it. But yeah, it resolves itself, and the last panel of that original run of Miles Morales is just him cockily smiling, saying, I am Spider-Man. But yeah, that was in the Ultimate Universe. Comic nonsense happened.
Comic nonsense happened.
Yep.
His mum was brought back to life. So, you know, one of his big motivations was gone. And he was brought into the main universe. A main universe which already has a Spider-Man. So there's like Peter Parker Spider-Man. So there's two Spider-Man in this. I'm going to talk about the main series and where it is currently right now. But also there's Spider-Men like, running now, but there's not an awful lot to say about that. But in the original Spider-Man, it was basically Mysterio did some reality jumping things.
He did some comic nonsense.
Yeah, he did some comic nonsense. Two Spider-Man who shouldn't be in the same universe are sent to the same universe. He closes the door. Stuff happens. They get back in the where they're supposed to be. The Peter Parker from the other universe checks out who Miles Morales is and says, oh my God, and they're doing the continuation of that now, which is only one chapter in, so you can't really comment too deeply on that. But the current run is weird. The arc that's just finished had Miles's dad, Jefferson, like, starting working for S.H.I.E.L.D. again to keep his kid safe. S.H.I.E.L.D. is run by Mary Hill now. And in doing that, he had a job where he had to go to, like, an alternate reality to do a sting and stop other people selling items that allow people to jump from reality to reality. In that, he meets Gwen Stacy Spider-Man, has a bit of a... Well, he falls in love with her, basically. And there's a running gag, you know, in the... What?
This is Miles who falls in love with her, not his dad.
Oh, no, Miles falls in love with her. He also gets, like, the means to jump between realities. His dad kind of goes missing, so S.H.I.E.L.D. turn up and says, yeah, we kind of cocked up a bit. Can you go and find your dad for us, please? And, you know, it has a bit of a reality jump and eventually gets to this reality where Gwen Stacy's a thing. And sort of running gag of the Ultimate series was a villain called The Ringer. And he turns out to be she, and she is a middle-aged black woman. So, yeah, it plays around with some jokes there, but eventually things happen. One of his main villains, because that's a big problem, I think, Miles Morales. He doesn't have, like, any nemesis. He just kind of has leftovers from Peter Parker. But the closest he really has to sort of a nemesis is the Scorpion. And in that sort of alternate reality things, he meets his dad, who is a Scorpion in one reality. So it has, like, a weird moment there where he thinks it's his dad, but it's not. You know, it just has his face. Because that's how alternate realities work.
And also the Nicolas Cage, John Travolta movie Face-Off.
Yes, it does. But at current, his mum, his revived mum, has found out who he is. In possibly the worst way to find out how a secret identity, you know. She finds a formula written on a piece of paper that says, like, web fluid. You know, he could have solved that situation just by having, like, a decent, you know, cataloguing system.
So it wasn't like the end of Spider-Man Homecoming then?
No. She's not, like, although Spider-Man Homecoming and his story have a lot in common, but no, it's, yeah, he basically just left a piece of paper out that says web fluid and there's a formula. He says, what is this? Who are you? Yeah, that's a bit of a cop-out, but it does have, like, some really good chapters that follow on from that, which she talks about how her family's lied to her all this time because, as I mentioned earlier, her husband is working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and that's never been mentioned. So I think that's the thing which has always sort of chimed with me when it comes to Miles Morales, is he's a bit more relatable, a bit more down-to-earth, which is Spider-Man used to be until, well, everything happened. But now he's really frustrated about that. So he goes out picking a fight. First person he'd happen upon is Hammerhead, who I guess is like one of the other people who he's basically had like the most conflict with. Because he doesn't really have that. He doesn't have like a villain. Like Spider-Man has like a great rogues gallery. Miles Morales doesn't really have much. He just has leftovers. And the only ones are, like I mentioned, Scorpion, Hammerhead, and Black Cat. And yeah, he picks a fight with Hammerhead. Hang on, I forgot that right.
Yeah, he's the one who's got like a metal plate in his head.
Oh yeah, he picks a fight with Hammerhead, partly because he's frustrated with his mum knowing who he is, and partly because he said to Bombshell, who also appeared in this Peter Parker run earlier, a sort of a little boisterous bundle of energy who's got explodey fists. She should be careful with those fists. And she's become sort of like a friend of his, and Miles says, oh, you should become a superhero. She does badly, gets the hell beat out of by Hammerhead. So like I said, he's getting his frustrations out by going to beat somebody up and also get a bit of revenge at the same time. That goes badly, but he also proceeds to really frustrate and annoy Hammerhead. So the usual thing that happens, there's a hip out in him, and that's where it happens, and... That's where it is now. And yeah, Hammerhead goes, uh-oh, at the end of the last panel. So, you know, it's somebody who's a major player, somebody who's incredibly dangerous. I'm kind of hoping it'll be the Taskmaster, because he's who's appeared in the Spider-Man comic, the second Spider-Man comic. And he's always interesting, you know, because he seems to have like an answer for everything. And for somebody like Miles Morales, who doesn't really know what he is or what he can do, that's always an interesting challenge for a character, I think. But yeah, it's more interested in who's going to be the love interest right now. And I think that's a bit weak.
Well, the last time I looked, Miles Morales fancied Kamala Khan, didn't he?
That's still a thing. And there's also a blogger who's amazed by the fact that this is Spider-Man is black. And she's like a YouTube blogger.
So how does the blogger know that he's black? Because when he's Spider-Man, he's got a mask.
Yeah, but since this initial run began, this Spider-Man is really bad at keeping his mask on. Whether it's Miles or Peter Parker, they're both really bad at keeping their identity secret.
Right.
And so in a fight with some demon god thing, he loses his mask a bit and blogger goes nuts.
Marvel are not particularly subtle when it comes to social issues.
No.
I can't wait till you enter Spider-Verse, Rob. It's going to blow your mind.
It's only a short run, oh, damn, Spider-Man is black. And that's what a lot of people have hated on this for, because they think it's just sort of the bassy stuff that, Miss Marvel is Asian, And all these characters are different ethnicities, you got Mockingbird being a character with a story. And there's a lot of backlash to it. But I think they're in this position where they've got to really establish themselves and go past just being, an interesting concept and have their own stories and have their own conflicts and have their own sort of paths.
Yeah, I think we spoke to this a few weeks back, that I don't think inherently there's a problem with sort of ethnicity in superhero comics, but they kind of need to have their own motivations and not just be, if we're going to have a black superhero, why does it have to be a black Spider-Man? Why can't it be a new superhero with new powers, new insights, new motivations?
He can be Aphid Man.
No, because then he'll get eaten by Lady Bird.
Yeah. But that's my problem with it. We're bringing in diversity to our universe, but we're going to do it using things that we know we can rely on. We're taking the risk out of doing it.
Yeah.
Brian Michael Bendis was great at Spider-Man, but the longer and more he's done it, the less direction he seems to have for it. He seems to be writing all of it pretty much right now, all the worthwhile stuff, not like Spidey, which is currently running now, and that's toilet.
Yeah, I think that's kind of another symptom of the idea that Miles Morales is now just the second Spider-Man.
Yeah, there was danger of Silk heading in that direction at one point. Same with Spider-Gwen.
Yeah, I think all of them basically, they're stuck just standing at the bottom of the table hoping to catch whatever scraps Peter Parker throws away.
Yeah.
Well, I'll keep reading it. I'm enjoying it enough, but it just needs that reason to be. And right now it's just, there's another chapter, or there's another chapter, or there's another chapter. There's no overarching, arcs, really.
It sounds very much as if the motivation for the next issue is contractual obligation.
Yeah.
A little bit. It's enjoyable enough, but that is basically what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so final bit then, Mick.
Yes.
It's all on you.
Oh, the pressure. So, I was given a bit of a treat. I was given the new version of the documentary Future Shock, The Story of 2000 AD, which the original's been around for a wee while now, but the guys at Rebellion have released this updated, expanded edition. It's on, I believe, two DVDs or a Blu-ray. And frankly, it should be put out there as a sort of six-part series. There's so much in the way of extra interviews and character-specific interviews. There's features relating to specific movie tie-ins and stuff. But let's get back to basics. For those of you who've been living under a rock since forever, 2000 AD was to comics in Britain what punk was to basically everything. Up to 1977, British comics fell largely into two categories.
Okay.
You had what I like to call the fun comics. So that would be your Wizard and Chips, Beano Dandy, that kind of stuff, aimed primarily at young kids, featuring a host of strange and wacky characters who got up to mischief and shenanigans, and usually their nemesis, usually they were smart kids, and their nemesis was some miserable adult who was trying to stop them having fun. So that was one category. And the other category was your adventure comic, which usually involved the valiant Allied troops beating up Nazis and shooting them with tanks.
I think I read that comic loads of times in different things.
Yes. It came out every week and was called Victor or Valiant.
Though we might just Victor on Valiant.
So that's pretty much where the comic book landscape was. And then supplemented by your superhero comics coming over from the US, you had a sort of grey area with a couple of TV tie-in comics, like TV comic, TV action, Century 21, which was basically an Anderson comic that tied in loosely with popular TV series. So TV action would cover things like Adam Adamant, Doctor Who, and those kind of things. You had Lookin', which had comic strips that tied in with ITV shows like Tomorrow People. But it was all very black and white. It was all very austere. And even the fun comics weren't that much fun because the plots were very limited. And in 1977, a new comic with the, at the time, strangely futuristic but now dangerously anachronistic title, 2000 AD, just appeared from seemingly nowhere. And wiped all that aside. Suddenly, you had dinosaurs eating people and there was blood spatter everywhere. You had totalitarian lawmen beating up perps just for being there. You had Celtic warriors dressed in very little other than a bit of fur and loincloth. And it was just action and gore and violence and horror and sci-fi just leaping off every page at you. And there was a sort of no-holds-barred open submission policy. And from that, you got this whole generation of, at the time, new talent that were doing these little four-page Future Shock stories to try and get a name for themselves. And the golden era of 2000 AD featured names like Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons, Wagner, Bisley. All these people, Disraeli, they all made their name in 2000 AD and then went off to DC. Future Shock is the documentary of that explosion. And it takes you from the birth of 2000 AD, which launched as part of IPC magazines. Their office was sat alongside Wizard and Chips and those funsy comics and also those action comics that portrayed war heroes. But the other major shift with 2000 AD was you didn't have black and white. In all the other comics at the time, there was good, there was bad, and never the twain shall meet. The occasional double agent, but they usually turned out to be either a really bad guy who'd been stringing people along or a really good guy who'd been stringing the bad guys along. It was always that black and white. 2000 AD came along.
Well, yeah, but to be because they couldn't afford the colour printings.
2000 AD came along and was physically black and white for a lot of his pages, but the actual characters were very grey. Judge Dredd is not a nice guy.
No, he's not.
He's a lawman who beats the crap out of you because you're jaywalking, but it does it with a way of holding up a mirror to the social anxieties of the future. You've got to remember that at the time 2000 AD came out, we'd just come out of an era of three-day weeks, power blackouts, public services going on strike, the railway infrastructure had been decimated by strike action, that we'd had weeks and weeks of rubbish being left out on the streets because no one was collecting it. And it was really dire. And 2000 AD was like that reaction against a dismal grey world, and it just shone. And Future Shock is a really in-depth, really powerful documentary charting the background to how it became. Now, at the time it launched, there were probably 20 comics titles coming out of that office building. The office building is now being turned into apartments. It's the 40th anniversary of 2000 AD this year, and by extension, Judge Dredd. 2000 AD is the only title out of that IPC stable that still exists and is still relevant and is still influential. Not as much as it used to be, for sure, but it's still there. People still recognise the name. Future Shock, the documentary, the new edition, has something like 6 hours of extras over and above the original two-hour documentary. And as I mentioned, there are interviews with particular artists. There's shots of them doing how they create a character, drawing from scratch. There's particular features on characters from 2000 AD and their transition into other media. So there's a separate documentary for each of the two Dread movies. There's information about independent movies of things that were definitely Rogue Trooper, but for licensing purposes weren't called Rogue Trooper.
They were called Soldier instead, weren't they?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it Kurt Russell?
Oh, no, there was a much lower budget version than that.
Was there?
Oh, yes.
I might have to hunt this down then.
So, I mean, it's an investment in time. I haven't worked my way through all 8 hours yet, but I've rewatched the core documentary, and it's been upscaled and remastered beautifully. The artwork that punctuates the various sections is gorgeous, and all it's been animated from original 2000 AD layouts, and it's just a fascinating insight into the minds of the people working on a comic that became so influential. Listening to the arguments, discussions, things like, you know, people like Alan Moore creating for a comic like 2000 AD, or John Wagner and Carlos Esquerra creating Judge Dredd and giving away the rights to the characters. The minute they submitted those storylines, that was it. 2000 AD owned the characters. So there was no possibility of them earning extra money by taking the character somewhere else or anything like that. And that was one of the arguments that almost broke 2000 AD apart at one point.
Well, I mean, I think it's been a pretty thorny issue for all the big publishers.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. But when you're a tiny part of a massive organisation, you can find yourself being more trouble than you're worth and being shut down quite hastily. So there's quite a lot of turmoil behind the pages. Quite apart from the visceral violence depicted within, it almost sounds like some of the artwork that depicted Judge Dredd's violence might have actually just been drawn in the office as someone's doing like a courtroom picture of what was going on. Pat Mills, I think, probably gets the award for angriest man in comics.
There's someone angrier than Alan Moore?
Yes.
Ooh.
I'm not sure about that. I'd have to see this.
One of the extras is Pat Mills walking towards Kingsreach Tower, which is where IPC were based back in the day. And as I mentioned earlier, it's getting turned into luxury apartments now. And, you know, Pat Mills points out that potentially there could be some super rich 2000 AD fan desperately wanting to have the apartment where the 2000 AD office was located. But he makes the point that nowadays there's a whole market that gets ignored, that originally all those comics were hankering after. And that's the 8 to 13 year old.
Yeah.
No one writes comics for them anymore. You've got lots of people pumping money into kiddie comics for the sort of like your sort of In the Night Garden sort of type tie-in.
Sonic the Hedgehog comic or something like that.
Yeah. And there's plenty for the more mature audience, but there's nothing now to sit in that sort of what used to be your boy's own adventure age group of 8 to 13 year olds.
Actually, that's because they all grew up, started writing comics for other people who grew up reading comics.
Yeah. And 2000 AD kind of did that. I mean, when it first launched, I was 9 and I had Prog 1, sadly lost in the voids of time. But, and the other thing that people don't realize is that Judge Dredd wasn't even in there for the first 8 or 9 weeks. People always have this synonymous, notion that Judge Dredd was what made 2000 AD. No, he wasn't even there to start with. And it just exploded as a comic. So, but yes, Future Shock. So if you haven't seen it already, watch it. I think the original version is available on certain streaming services and gets a run out occasionally on Film 4. But if you really want to get the full angle of the full history and soak yourself up in a classic of British comics, then get the full Blu-ray edition with all the extras.
Fantastic. My first 2000 AD story was ABC Warriors. I still remember it because I'd never read a comic like it before.
Yeah. And that was the thing. I mean, the one abiding memory that I had, which is something that I quickly reacquainted myself with, The one that grabbed me on Prog 1 was the Flesh story.
Yes.
And Flesh was the goriest thing I've ever read. Rereading it now with a more mature mindset and you know, having been educated in the ways of storytelling and stuff like that. The stories are actual pants. The script is appalling. But the action and the gore and the violence is... It was like nothing I'd ever seen before.
Yeah. Slane was another one that always got me because it was... It was just strange and trippy and very, very Celtic, as you said.
Yeah.
But anyway,
this conversation's going to go on for hours, so run, listeners, run while you still can.
Sorry.
How much I mean we're at the end of the show.
Yes, we are.
Run for the hills, listeners.
I will. All I'm saying is I never really understood Slane, but that didn't stop me liking it.
Yeah. So that's my two, Penneth.
Yep, and that's it. We are at the end of the show, as Andrew has said. All of our shows are available on Audioboom, iTunes, and other podcast services. If you are listening through anything like that, then subscribe. It'll keep you up to date with all of the shows that are coming out. We are part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, which is also on there as well. So check it out. We have more shows available, not just Four Panel. We do Keyframe, Cinema Collectica, and various other shows like that. We'll be back next week with more comic book, manga, graphic literature goodness. But until then, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
I've been Mick.
And I've been Rob.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.